Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Four of my friends and I decided to go ghost hunting at this abandoned house a few years ago. We go in and it's super freaking creepy. There's drawing all over the walls. Satanic shit. The floors were caving in and it was raining. Super creepy. So, we go upstairs and sit in the center of the room. We set up the equipment and start asking questions. My friend's girlfriend kept saying she wanted to go outside and see if there was anything out there. I told her it would be hard to capture any voices because of the outside noise and the rain. It would be useless. Suddenly, my friend's girlfriend states that she heard scratching coming from one room. Being skeptical, I told her it was bullshit. We went to that room. There was a fucking pentagram drawn on the floor. It covered the space of the whole room. I don't really like messing with shit like that. So at that point, I look at my friends and say, "Fuck that, fuck this, I'm out of here." I handed them the EVP stuff and walked out of the house. It was raining harder than it was before, and my friend's car was locked. We were trespassing, so I thought it would be useful to be on the lookout for cops. Sure enough, I see a cop car in the distance. He stops outside the house. We were smart enough to park down the street. So I called my friend and warned them that there was a cop at the turnoff, and to turn off all the lights and to shut up. The cop finally leaves. Suddenly, two of my friends come running out. I asked them where my other friend is and where his girlfriend is at. They told me that they were getting creeped out, so they left. Within 2 minutes, they come running out and tell us to get in the car. We quickly drive off. I asked them what happened and they said that they just kept hearing noises behind them. We get to my friend's girlfriend's apartment and we start listening to the EVP. Nothing much happened. Suddenly, I can hear a whisper near the end. "There's nothing outside." It talked over my friend and his girlfriend right before they stated that they wanted to leave. It was like mocking us, saying there was nothing outside. I got chills hearing that. They got chills hearing that. They also said there were a lot of dead birds in the basement, and that there were more satanic shit drawn everywhere. We haven't gone back since, and I don't think we will. So, this is something that happened a few years ago to me and my friends. There used to be an old, run-down house near where I lived. It's now been knocked down, but it used to be where the gated-off bit was. As a bit of backstory, there were all these rumors that homeless people lived in it, the previous owner was murdered, and it was a drug den, etc. So, me and my friends were 16 and drinking and messing around on the beach, and it was about 10:30. We'd ran out of beer, so my mate with a fake ID was getting more from the Tesco just up the road. When he got back, he mentioned at the house, and that it would be cool to go inside. We joked about it and made our way to the house. To be honest, I didn't want to go in and was hoping there would be a door or something to stop us from getting inside. Unfortunately, I was wrong and there was no door on this house. We walked in, and the first thing I noticed was a very strong smell of piss, and there was dirt all over the floors. We went into the first room on the left, which used to be a living room. There was the frame of a sofa, which we could just now make out due to the streetlight coming through. All over the floor was rubbish. Beer cans, crisp packs, syringes, etc. Now this should have been a sign to get out of there as the house clearly wasn't abandoned. Anyway, we left that room and went into the kitchen, and it was a similar story. Shell of a room, littered with rubbish. We carried on looking about the bottom floor, until we got confident that it was just us. I was in the kitchen with my friend, who was trying to get the fridge in there open. It was fastened shut by God knows what. I refused to touch it due to how filthy it looked. He was making a fair bit of noise, whacking and scraping at the edges with a bit of a banister from the upstairs to try to lever it open. In between the noise that he was making, we both heard a creaking sound upstairs and froze. We quickly went into the living room and saw that our other four mates were in there. By this point, I was panicked and terrified. We let our friends know what we heard, and all agreed that it was time to leave and carry on without anything else happening. Everyone was trying to be brave at this point. We were walking out and we all heard another creaking, but this time it was on the stairs. I was at the back and turned around and could just make out the silhouette on the stairs, at which point I shouted something along the lines of, "Fuck, run!" And we all sprinted out. We got out the house and hopped the wall, and we were all waiting outside, fixed on the door. A man stepped out of the house and turned back and went in. I don't particularly remember what he looked like, but he definitely didn't look homeless, and I didn't recognize him as one of our local homeless guys. Like a bunch of drunk 16-year-olds, we went back to the beach and started coming up with theories. Two of the guys were adamant that he had a knife in his hand and that they could smell something rotting in one of the rooms, claiming he was a murderer and one of us could have been his victim. Whoever he was, I still get chills thinking about it today, and I don't think I've ever been more scared in my life. In my town, there used to be an abandoned prison. It has since been knocked down. It was in the middle of the woods, and it wasn't the kind of place you'd end up accidentally. Every once in a while, police would patrol around it for the most part. It was just barbed wire fences doing their job. Now, this wasn't a high-security prison for serial killers or anything like that, but it held robbers and rapists and the like, up until about 8 years prior to the incident. It was unsettling during the daytime, especially as so much of it had been left behind as if the place was abandoned in a hurry. But it was downright creepy at night. Well, in high school, my friend Nick and I loved exploring. We went all over, including to the abandoned hospital that was only a couple of miles away from the jail. We were lucky. Growing up in the area, we knew that there was a small hole under the fence in one area which was the only way to access the jail. One night, we made the normal trip under this hole and were talking and walking around the area outside of the jail. We were moving as quietly as we could, because as I said before, occasionally, police will patrol the area. They just parked their cars at the fence on the opposite side of the fence from where we entered, so we wouldn't be able to see them if they were there. Eventually, we were pretty sure that there were no police, so we began to be a little louder and turned on our flashlights. I should mention now, other than the occasional policeman who parks his car outside the fence, we had never seen another person anywhere near the jail, let alone inside of the fenced area. We were hesitant to enter the jail itself, first of all because of how scary it is at night, and second because it's a pain in the ass to get into the jail itself during the daytime, let alone at night. So instead, we kind of just walked around the outside for a while as we normally do, scaring ourselves for the fun of it. Anyway, eventually, we start to work up the courage to go inside the jail. So, we make it to the long trip to the other side of it, to where we know there was an entrance. We were walking along the side of the jail, where the cells were, which made these huge windows. These were so that, from the outside, when the jail was in use, you could see all the inmates and what they were doing. As we're walking, out of nowhere, a light turns on from inside one of the cells that were only a few feet away from us. We can't really see anything inside, just the beam of flashlight which first points upwards and then directly at us. At first, we just froze in terror. As I said before, we'd never seen anyone in there before. Who would be sitting inside of a cell, totally silent and in the darkness as a couple of teenage boys walked around the outside? We couldn't imagine that it was a fellow thrill seeker like us. It was not the kind of place you'd sit alone in the dark. A homeless person? No, we didn't think we'd have a flashlight anyway. and we assume that cops must look through the inside during the day. A police officer? Probably not. There was no reason for him to be sitting inside of the building, waiting while we had known that we were there for a long time. After a few seconds, we sprinted away as fast as we could. I didn't even turn around to see if we were being followed or anything. We just found the hole under the fence and got the fuck out of there. So, we wonder to this day, who is sitting inside of the abandoned jail cell in the dark, presumably watching two teenage boys walk around inside, then waiting until we were only about a few feet away to announce his presence by turning on a flashlight. I'd assume we'll never know the answer to that question, and I don't really want to know. We never went back at night, and that place is gone now.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I assume now that the building in question was probably a retirement home, although in high school we treated it like it was an abandoned mental ward, but referred to it as the old folks' home. It was one of our greatest desires to explore it, and we completely expected and secretly wished to have a terrifying experience. Everyone agreed that the place was haunted, although it isn't, and I don't believe in that stuff anyway. It had been abandoned for as long as any of us knew, just on the outskirts of our small town in Middle America. There were four of us that explored the grounds and later the interior in episodic increments, discovering more each time. The first time we were brave enough to go, it was just before dark. The place was locked up tight. The second time, a door at the back of it had a glass window smashed out. This should have been our first clue to stay away. As it was the glass with the lines of wire through it, something hung the window with a little dry blood on it. One of us reached through and turned the handle from the inside and opened the door. With windows boarded up, no moonlight lit the hallways, and we only had one flashlight. We went down two hallways. All the rooms along the way were empty, except for one or two with a lone chair or bed frame. We discovered that there was a second floor and a basement, but we didn't get a chance to explore more as a red light attached to a car battery freaked one of us out. We thought it was an alarm or something. Anyway, we scoped it out for a few weeks and made sure there weren't any security patrols or anything weird like that. We never knew who owned it. Somebody had to own it. Nobody looked after it aside from mowing the lawn once a month. We returned the third time with intentions to map the place out. I wanted to go find some cool antique or something. We were all freaked out by the darkness and had the idea of ghosts, but none of us considered the possibility of other people being in the building. In the basement, we finally found creepy signs of other visitors, but it wasn't until the last minute that feces started hit the fan. There was one room with a dirt floor and a Christmas tree planted in the middle of it, as in it was decorated pine tree, tinsel, beer cans, paper clowns. Beer cans and empty liquor bottles encircled the room, a ridiculous amount of them. The door to the room was like a cell door, metal bars and a broken lock. One of us waited at the door because he kept hearing someone, and he called to us with an update as we found a bunch of buried Christmas trees at the back of the room. "I think I hear someone," he whined, was his catchphrase. We had varying theories on the room. It was all new stuff as far as we could tell, not as dusty as everything else in the building. All in all, it was more odd than creepy. The room at the end of the hall had lights hanging from the ceiling, smashed to pieces, glass covering the floor. A staircase at the back led up, and to an area that we hadn't seen yet. There were chairs and desks clogging the way, splinters and nails pointing in every direction. Everything happened in a flash. There was a creak, then a door slamming shut down the hall, and we scurried over to the desk and chairs to the ground floor. The door was locked there, so we continued to the second floor, which was unknown to us. We sprinted down the hall and doorway to our right, and then something caught our attention. Inside was a mattress. On the floor next to it was a giant tub of peanut butter and a pair of stained underwear. It depends on who you ask, but we took the room as a deafening alarm. Probably a homeless person lived there. It's nothing sinister. I stepped into the doorway to try and see more, and as soon as I saw the upside-down cross on the wall, I think it was upside-down, but it could have been just fear. We heard wood snapping in the stairway. Not just someone coming up, the legs of chairs being broken. We bolted down the hall and found another staircase to get back to the ground floor and exit the building. We made it a block away and stopped to catch our breath. Everything was still for a moment, and then a car pulled out from behind the abandoned building and sped toward us. We ran again and didn't stop until we were back at my friend's house. None of us have a clue about anything we saw there. We didn't know if we should be worried or anything. We just hadn't seen enough, really. We never went near it again, and a year later it was demolished. A Holiday Inn stands where it used to be. I live in Massachusetts. There's a location out here called the Belchertown State School for the Feeble-Minded. Check it out on Wikipedia and Google some pictures. It's pretty neat stuff. Well, it has a very dark history with ill treatment of patients, including children and reported suicides. Closed in 1992, it was mostly demolished in late 2016 into 2017. But before that, I spent a year going there on a weekly basis, usually Fridays. I began with a few friends, and then over time I would go there alone. I spent a lot of time on those grounds to the point to where I knew every part of it, inside and out. I even became something of a local legend because I wore a mask when exploring, and if I ran into other groups they would recognize me from the stories. There are a few selfies out there of me and some folks too. People liked taking pictures. Never saw any of the selfies though, sadly. But there were many nights I had the whole grounds to myself. Paranormal activity was rampant, and I have some crazy stories. The most obvious and frequent one was noises. Now, mind you, the whole of the complex was in disrepair. Not only that, but wild animals would sometimes move in and out of the location, so there were a lot of unidentified noises I could likely attribute to animals. I'm a firm believer in the paranormal, but I try to approach all things as a skeptic before jumping to potential activity. A few things I couldn't explain. One was the X door. There was one door in the hospital. It was on the third floor, right wing, second door into the floor on the left. It was beside that once was a bathroom. This door led to a hall containing several empty rooms, and I could not determine what these rooms might have been. They didn't look like cells, more like office or storage spaces. This door was heavy. It took effort to move. I'm a pretty stocky, 6-foot dude and I had to lean into this door to get it to move. I call it the X door, cause it was the only door in the whole facility marked with a spray painted orange X on the door. Imaginative, I know. This door was a highlight for my personal trips, as well as when I went with groups, because we would close the door, walk away, and later come back to find it open. It's possible some animal managed to open it, as unlikely as that is. What was more unlikely were the times we left it open and when we came back about 10 minutes later and it was closed. I tried, when alone, to sit and watch the door, but nothing ever happened. I tried to replicate potential causes, but there was zero airflow in this wing due to heavy doors on all other sides, and honestly, if an animal did get in, it could not have been bigger than a rat due to there being so little open space to move in this particular segment. I can never explain the X door, but it was always a good stun when I'd bring up a group back up to that floor and we'd find the door shifted. Another experience was one time I was bringing two of my friends out there. It was their first time to the grounds. We made it past the fence and to the outside of the asylum. They didn't want to go in, getting spooked. I encouraged them to try it. I had some cool stuff to see after all. And then we all three at the same time heard what sounded like screaming, laughter, and talking all at the same time. I heard more laughter, but my friends say some screaming was more prominent. Now, could have been another group inside the hospital building, but here's the thing. I have been on the grounds when another group is talking or laughing or screaming inside, and you can't pinpoint exactly where it goes down. Lots of broken windows and open walls, so it's pretty damn easy to lock down at least what segment the group was from. But this sound came from the building. That's the only way I can explain it. Like, the whole building at once just let loose a stream of trapped sounds. I am a gutsy bloke, but I got chills too, and we left, to the begging of my friends to flee the grounds. Wish I could have stayed the night. The activity was just getting started, I feel. I would go there weekly and spend about a half hour in several key rooms. The padded cell, the silent room, the X room, the auditorium gym. A lot of great sounds and some truly disturbing sensations. I recently went with my mother to her job, just to get the feel for the place since I'll likely be working there soon. She's a groundskeeper at a university. Basically, the university buys up nearby homes to expand itself, and they bought up this elderly man's home after he died. A really big, 2-bathroom, 3-bedroom managing to fit on 1 floor and a basement. It's been stripped down to a few curtains and a piece of furniture or two. The groundskeepers basically used the home as a massive break room. I stayed there for about 7 hours a week, or two ago, and I got freaked out. For starters, there's a big empty room with a small table and 2 chairs in one corner, and right in the middle is a small chandelier. Well, after about 30 minutes of getting settled in the home, I started to walk around, and that chandelier was slightly moving back and forth. I'm unsure if this elderly man or not, but there's nothing I can think of other than the elderly man that could have moved it. It was a freezing day out, so all the windows and doors were shut. There's a single fan in the house that I can recall, and it was not on. I specifically checked once, and I noticed the swinging. About an hour later, I get the courage to go down into the massive basement, since I was bored. There are no lights down there, despite there being 3 massive rooms in total, plus a bathroom down there. Before I went in, I took a picture at the top of the stairs looking down. I don't know if my mind is fucking with me, but I swear to God there's a face at the bottom. My final evidence. What haunting goes without unexplained footsteps. After going down to the basement and barely going past the steps from running back up them again, I heard a distant but loud set of footsteps. About 4 steps on hard wood, with about a half second in between each step. They sounded like they were on the other side of the house. Keep in mind, it's a very echo-prone house due to there being nothing but wooden floors and big open spaces, so it may have been anywhere. So tomorrow I'll be going back there again with the same amount of time. What should I do? Should I ask it anything? Should I leave it alone? I kinda want to interact with him a bit more, since those who knew him said he was a nice guy.
Happy birthday, America! It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This happened just a few days ago, and it terrifies me so much that I still look over my shoulder when I'm in a room by myself. So, I work with the construction, and the part of the office that is. I have a team of guys and a girl who happens to be a really good friend of mine. We are all pretty young, early to late 20s, and had the opportunity to check out a building before demolition. Unfortunately, we weren't allowed to have cell phones or take pictures of anything because of safety. And our only communication was with walkie-talkies to a team outside. We were decked out in our field gear, steel-toe boots, jeans, safety vests, gloves, safety glasses, and hard hats to be exact. Anyways, we went up to the top floor to check out the building while our boss did some technical work with the safety manager. As they were working, we were given the okay to explore a little. My friend and I went down the floor with a group to be away from the bosses and began messing around. The building was huge and still had some things inside of it, like tubes, buildings, old chairs, etc. You can imagine the jousting that took place. Long story short, a coworker got a bloody nose. Being the only girls, we took him into the bathroom to clean it up before having to report blood to the boss man, literally upstairs. So in the bathroom, we shoved his nose full of extra paper and washed it down for the water hadn't been shut off yet. As we were cleaning him up, a knock came on the door and a "this isn't funny" type line. I went to the door and began to open it when I noticed that it was jammed. And then I said, "this isn't funny." After a few tugs, I heard a panic in my coworker's voice on the other side of the door and started pounding. We were all yelling something as blood started seeping through the Brian's papers. Jane went to grab more when suddenly the bathroom stall doors all shut at the same time, bouncing off the doors, and they stopped and the freaking lights went out. Someone screamed. It may have been me, and I started clawing at the door, yelling to let us out. This bathroom had zero windows in it, and I can't even tell you how fucking dark it was inside. We were scared, so scared, and Brian was cursing profusely. I heard a sudden rush of air, like in scary movies when the ghost is breathing, if you can imagine. It was like a freezing cold person was trying to exhale. And I felt a horrible sticky hand crawl up the back of my hard hat. I ripped it off, and Jane screamed from the sound of it hitting the floor at her feet. Finally, a loud bang ripped the door open, and the others came rushing in, pale-faced. We were all yelling and screaming at each other. We all made it out safe, and I got my hard hat back from my boss checking out the bathroom. All he found was blood on the sink. I can still feel that hand on the back of my head if I sit here for a while, and I'm constantly wiping away at air. I'm terrified of going to a bathroom by myself now, even at home if I have the dogs come in with me. One time, me, my two cousins, one male, one female, and my friend had went to this big piece of land filled with foliage going down a hill. This was called the Big Hill to the locals down below. It was private property, but we didn't care. Another thing to note that it was actually starting to get dark out. Anyways, while we were there, we stumbled across a small, abandoned house with two shed-like structures next to it. This detail is more interesting than important. We wanted to explore it, but my female cousin was not having it. She forced us to come home, and we stayed there for about an hour. She finally let us go, but me, being the only one with a phone in the group, had to text her every 3 to 5 minutes, with info on what was going on and that we were safe and the like. When we got there, it was basically pitch black outside. My friend and my cousins both had flashlights. As I had my phone for light, I kept the constant stream of info and pictures to my cousin. Everything went normal for a while. We were goofing off and discussed whether we should try to get footage of the garage or not. It had a huge hole in the ceiling into the attic. We exited the garage and discussed whether we should try to get it or not. I offered to do it, but my cousin, the male one, would have had to boost me up there, him being much taller at the time. I was down for it, but my friend said that I was nuts and that we should leave. We argued for a solid minute or so, and suddenly, we heard a slam in the garage. we were like 20 feet away. I don't mean like a single bump. I mean like a solid slam in the garage. We all booked it instantly. And my friend tripped me on mistake. I looked behind while pulling myself up, and I saw what looked like a man peeking through the doorway behind the garage. I only saw this for a split second, but before getting up and running with my cousin. We had to go down the hill to get back and hop a fence. I was the last to reach the fence, and when I got over, I texted my cousin what happened. It haunts me to this day that we didn't exit that garage. We may not be here today. As an intro, I go by the name Holt, and I'm an urban explorer living in Virginia. I got into urban exploration, or urbex, just because I love the thrill of exploring places long since abandoned. But within that time, I have tended to come across some rather terrifying experiences. Depending on what kind of feedback I get, I'll see if you guys would like to hear any more. But for now, I'll just share this one experience. One of my first experiences with the weirder and creepier side of urbex was when I started back in 2014. About two counties over from where I live, there's a mental institution called Central State Hospital. Being on the older side of this county, remnants of the previous buildings from 1926 are still standing. From the historical documents and records that I uncovered while doing some research, Central State Hospital was built following the Civil War to aid in relief efforts for recently freed black slaves. But as time went on, the facility became one of its first in the South to offer mental hospitalization for black patients. The new building is now built right next to the old one. So, after some digging, snooping and spying, I finally worked up the gumption to break in and explore. Armed with a flashlight and a mounting curiosity and a pry bar, I pulled back one of the boarded up windows and crawled in. Not knowing what to expect, I began to wander the dark and creepy hallways of the Holt Hospital, checking each room for anything interesting. The facility is basically one large square with four-story corners. Most likely offices, two-story corridors, and a now heavily wooded courtyard. Where I got in was the east front corner. I wandered most of the corridors until I found a stairwell leading downstairs. On the sublevel, it was a long corridor that held an autopsy room, morgue, and furnace room. Now, after an hour or so of looking around, reading old documents, and noticing some suspicious drug paraphernalia, I decided to make my way out, seeing how it was going on midnight. As I turned around to leave, I noticed that the street security light that you would see from the bottom of the stairs was now absent. To my absolute horror, a massive, black figure at about 8 feet tall stood up at the top of the stairwell. Now, being the 6'7" bruiser that I was, I did the most logical thing any man would do. I screamed like the bitch I was up the stairs and through the figure. Out the pried open window and into the loving arms of Petersburg's finest. Slapped with a potential trespassing charge and sitting in the back of a police cruiser, I was questioned about the screaming. When I told the officer what I had seen, he turned absolutely white as a sheet. Apparently, since him and his partner started doing rounds on this property, they had constantly seen apparitions all along the open windows at the top floors. Needless to say, I got off with a slap on the wrist and no more kind of deal. So, for some preface, there is a park just outside of Richmond called Bell's Isle. People go kayaking, fishing, and hiking. There is an area of Bell's simply called the Rocks, where a lot more illegal things happen. A lot of smoking, drinking, skinny dipping, fucking, and all of that fun shit. I, of course, was always there. There's just something about the Rocks that's just simply pristine and beautiful. About a mile down from the entrance to the Rocks, there's a little tiny cove where a massive and decrepit pump house from the early 1960s sits, abandoned. I've seen a fuck ton of people jump off the third story into the water below, almost like a diving board. Now, like I said, this facility was big, and I mean it was big. It stretched out about 50 feet and stood maybe 150 feet tall. that was maybe 5 floors total. There wasn't anything entirely fascinating about the place, to be honest, but it was just a massive concrete husk with old piping and scaffolding. The park closes at dusk, just like most parks in the area, but that didn't stop anybody from getting out there, starting a fire at the rocky outcroppings and getting wasted for far, far into the late in the night. I, of course, did so as well. It was maybe midnight before I decided that a 12-pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon, shit's disgusting, 3 or 4 joints, and my s'mores, it was time to roll out. Packing up my small backpack, I went ahead and started out towards my truck. After rock hopping for about a quarter mile upstream, I passed by the old pump house. I recall there was a pathway behind the pump house that gets me a lot quicker to the parking lot. So, in the dead of night, armed with nothing but a flashlight in my little .32 Colt, I started making my way down the path. Walking along the trail, it borders a brick wall of the pump house. I noticed a door I had never seen before. A massive and heavy-looking steel door. My curiosity piqued. I decided to test the door. Sure as shit, the door moved. It swung open with a loud, groaning, scraping sound. I shined the flashlight down the hall, a set of stairs that leads down, presumably, to the control room. I pulled my revolver out slowly, holding it tightly onto the walnut grip as I creeped down the bowels of the pump house. Making it down to the basement of the stairwell, I noticed a few things right off the bat. Number 1, it was indeed the control room, with old, grimy, dirty panels. Number 2, the smell hit me hard. Like, sickeningly hard. It reeked of mold, mildew, and blood. Number 3, the sketchy, looking pentagram that sat in the center of the fucking room. Yeah, you heard me, a pentagram, drawn out in chalk with some incredibly sketchy, questionable stains on the floor. Number 4, the candles that were burning around the circle. Okay, creep factor just fucking skyrocketed. I looked around the panel, surveying it. My heart leapt out of my throat when I heard footsteps and talking coming down the staircase. Panicked, my eyes looked around until I found a locker that was big enough to get into. I quickly got in, and very quietly shut the door, and stayed as silent as the grave. I watched through the grates of the locker door, feeling like I was a cheesy person in a horror movie. 6 robed and hooded men came down into the panel room and gathered around the circle. One man carried a panting dog in his arms. The men slowly chanted what I can only assume was possibly words of Latin, while the man who held the dog set him down, then produced a knife. I watched in pure horror as the knife was plunged into the poor dog. It whined and struggled until it died. The chanting grew louder and intensified. The room grew deathly cold and the candles around the room went out. It was stupid fucking cold, even though it had been dead in the fucking middle of summer. I held my breath and stayed as still as humanly possible. After I want to say 20 minutes or so, the men began to leave. I sighed with relief. I jumped out of my fucking skin when my flashlight banged loud and clear against the locker door. God motherfucking damn it. I jumped out of the door, and I watched in pure horror as the two men came back down the stairs. So what now? Fuck this shit. I kicked the door open, off its rusty hinges, revolver in hand, using my 6'8", 320-pound body to belt out the loudest, "Get the fuck back, you fuckers!" I held the revolver up, aimed it at the closest man near me, and I clearly towered over the two men, and I was watched as the other 4 robed men come down barreling over the stairwell. I was trembling, holding the revolver at the small crowd in front of me. "How long were you here?" the first man asked me. "Long enough, friend," I answered. "Fair enough. Leave and speak to no one of this," he replied. "Deal," I said. Each one moved aside from the entrance, and I made my way up the stairs, my back facing away from them, revolver still aimed down the stairwell, and as soon as I made it out the door, I ran like my fat ass depended on it. Made the 20-minute hike in 5 minutes, hopped into my truck and hauled ass all the way home. I went back to Bell's about a month later, and was relaxing on the rock near the pump house, when a young man, probably in his 20s, sat down next to me. He lit up a smoke and spoke to me. "Tell me, friend, do you believe in God?" he spoke. I took my sunglasses off and looked over to him, tapping out the ashes of my cigarette. "It all depends." My heart skipped over a couple of times when I recognized the face of the young man. Take a guess who it was. He smiled at me. "On." I swallowed. "Who knows?" He got up and extended his hand. I would recommend you stay away from that house from now on, okay? I shook his hand. Sure, friend, sure. I haven't seen the young man since. And even after going his back as many times as I have.
Hello, Swamp Dweller. I have been listening to your stories lately, and it's brought back some memories from about 5 or 6 years ago. For some context, I live in a very large and urban Texas city. My neighborhood, however, had a big problem with coyotes. Every night at around 4 a.m., my uncle would get home from work and come across this one large coyote lurking in our front yard. Now, my whole family dismissed this as just a coyote enjoying our garden, but I believe that it could have been something else, and here's why. It began in the summer after I finished 6th grade. As a teenager, I had nothing to do, so I would stay up very late texting friends or playing something. One night, I was doing so when I heard tapping on my window. It was around 1 a.m., and since my window is on the side of the house, there was no way it could have been my uncle. Plus, it was way too early for him to be coming back home. I looked out the window after it happened, but there was nothing there. On the next night, at around the same time, I heard the tapping again. This time, it was followed by whistling. It was like they were trying to whistle that Twinkle Twinkle Little Star song, but it was all wrong. It was out of rhythm. Their voice kept breaking. I was frozen because I had never experienced anything like this at this hour. That morning during my breakfast, my uncle told us he saw a coyote lurking around the yard and to be careful whenever we go out. I thought the whistling would come back the next day, but to my astonishment, it did not. I did not tell my family about it because, let's face it, who would believe me if I said somebody was whistling Twinkle Little Star outside of my window? I didn't hear it again until the next summer. At around the same time, an entire year later, the whistling returned. When I first heard it, I thought my mind was playing tricks on me, but it was very clear. Now at this point, my uncle did not work overnight anymore, so he didn't see the coyotes. But my neighbors did. And the morning they told us that they saw a coyote in our front yard at night, the following night, the whistling began. I know I should have recorded it, but I always froze whenever I heard it. Skip forward another year. It was now summer, a summer of staying up late that I would hear whistling outside my window once again. So, to battle this, I would try to fall asleep listening to music. One night as I was drifting off, I heard a horrendous scream. Now, I would listen to metal music, but this scream was not in the song. I paused it, and it kept going. It was the loudest, ugliest, most terrifying thing I'd ever heard. It sounded incredibly high-pitched, like an infant, but somehow with developed vocal cords. I didn't sleep much that night, afraid I'd be woken up by the screaming. That morning, I asked around the house if they heard anything, but no one apparently did. I was entirely shocked because it was incredibly loud. Loud enough to go through my closed window. Since it would always happen 2 nights in a row, I thought it would happen again the next night, but thankfully it didn't. I never heard anything like it again, actually. Fast forward to this year, and I'm regularly listening to Skimwalker stories to help me pass the time at work, and it got me digging into their history. Now, I personally didn't see anything other than coyotes, but the way whistling and shape-shifting seem to be common signs of skimwalkers has me thinking, could this have been something malevolent or just a creep tormenting me at night? No one has seen any coyotes ever since that night that I heard the screaming, though, which is something else that I've also found very peculiar.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, Swamp Dweller. My name is Peter. I am 27 years old and I have been listening to your channel for quite some time now. I was listening to your stuff on Spotify and was reminded of an experience I had at the age of 19 years old. It was Halloween of 2013. The poetry of it. Anyway, I lived in southeast Montana, and it was my freshman year of college, and we were out due to a pipe burst. Like I said, the poetry of it all. I received a message in my friend's group chat. It was a good friend of mine, who, for discretional purposes, I will call L. Myself, A, D, M, and G, who was my girlfriend at the time, were invited to go drive around in his new truck. We met in the junior parking lot of the high school that bordered our neighborhood. We gave a homeless guy enough money to buy an ungodly amount of beer. We talked about numerous things, and among them was the subject of tonight's gathering. We came to the conclusion that being that it was Halloween, in the spirit of the occasion, we had to do something spooky, which in all honesty, would probably end up having us break into a poorly maintained, abandoned building or getting drunk off our asses in a graveyard. There were more than a few suggestions about what we would do, but my less reckless idea was initially driving the abandoned Highway 87 off of Elkshire Drive. After about an hour of preparing for a 3-hour ride, we set off around 5:30. We gossiped about neighborhood drama and exchanged relevant family situations and talked about crushes, grades, rumors, and what have you. At one point, I believe we even played Truth or Dare, but that's irrelevant. The first thing that struck me as odd was that the road that led to our destination was dead. Not a soul to be found, in a vehicle or otherwise, seemingly for miles in every direction. Now, bear in mind that we didn't know a damn thing about this road, aside from that it was abandoned and poorly maintained. We knew it was abandoned and could be the subject of urban exploration. I pity the poor fools who may have tried their hand at urban exploration in that area before us, or after us. We finally got to the exit that was fenced off with roadblocks that led to the highway. They seemed old themselves. Since I coined the idea, I was condemned to get out and move the roadblocks to open the gate. The moment I stepped out, I felt an insatiable feeling of dread and angst, the kind that a soldier would feel knowing that he was marching into his demise into an unseen danger. I felt like there was something ancient held behind this gate. I felt its presence, and though it didn't seem to be immediately near us, I got the strange sense that I knew it was approaching, entering its domain. I know it sounds juvenile, but it's true. I walked backward back to the truck, ensuring I never took my eyes off the road. When I got back to the car, everyone looked at me with blank faces and distress hidden underneath their facade of calmness. L asked me if I was sure I wanted to do this, as I'm sure he figured out I felt something and perhaps even felt it himself. I said yes in a fake, calm, collected tone and we drove on. We drank a ton. The intensity, it permeated the air beyond that point. A quick reminder not to drink and drive, or you may cause yourself and others some serious problems and nobody wants that. We were just stupid, quote-unquote daring teens back then, but that doesn't justify it at all. Just don't do it. I digress. I don't know where we were going. I think we were just waiting to see some creepy crackhead or ghost car out of the middle of nowhere so that we would have a story to tell. But you have to be careful what you wish for, lest your wishes be granted. And probably you won't want that, even if you think you do. It's hard for me to tell you exactly how long we had been driving for. Being pretty intoxicated made it kind of hard to tell what time it really was, but I do know it was around 10 p.m., The road was set up in such a way that there was a slope separating the two lanes and we were on the lower of the two. Below us, maybe 6 to 8 feet tall, was another slope that just led into miles and miles of dense, unchecked Montana backwoods. I'm not gonna lie. Even while drunk, that forestry below us, especially looking into it, instilled a sense of dread in me. That's when a decently sized rock flew up from the woods at the driver's side window. From the woods abruptly, and let me say that again, from the woods.
L abruptly stopped the car and we all instantly sobered up. We looked at each other and we were all pale as sheets. After a long and excruciating silence, M finally said, "Guys, please tell me this is the result of drunken hallucinations. But did you guys just see a..." I cut him off saying, "rock come flying out of the woods and hit our car?" M started mumbling something that I couldn't make out, but I could tell he was terrified. Maybe it was other urban explorers or some stupid kids playing pranks. It is Halloween after all," D said. Her voice was shakier than ever. "So, what was our brilliant solution to this spooky dilemma? We drank some more and got soused again. Out in the middle of nowhere, we decided probably hundreds of miles from any notable civilizations. At the same time, there was potentially dangerous individuals or animals feet away from us, only separated by a small, albeit steep slope with no service or internet, and we'd also need some time to recover and get sober outside again. So we got out, sat down, and had some food we had packed. We sat there not saying anything, just drinking despite our contrary solution. The last thing I remember that night was that D and M climbed up the slope to the other side of the road to stretch, and we made fun of the two lovebirds for wanting to do it out in the road. I woke up the following day around 5:47 with a hellish hangover, next to my girlfriend G, and A and L passed out in the two front seats of the truck. I woke everyone up groggily. We all unlocked the doors to stretch for a moment to catch our bearings. And then, something caught my eyes. The tires. They were all slashed. I instantly started panicking. "Oh crap, oh crap, oh crap," I said unevenly, trying to think of a way to fix it. Everyone walked over and saw it, and their eyes went wide. I walked over to the rundown railing, looking onto the canopy of forestry and woods, trying to come up with some sort of fact or term to figure out what could have caused this, you know? "Oh crap," I muttered. I heard an echo mock me from the canopy. I overlooked it and didn't pay it much attention. L's reaction was angry. It was his truck after all, and A had a similar response to me, whereas G was throwing up due to what I figured was a mixture of stress and hangover after effects. I walked over to L and told him this was all his fault. "You dumbass, you got us into a world of crap," I yelled. "Me? Me? This was your idea from the start. I don't believe that it's my fault that you don't weigh the consequences of stuff like this, you moron." We argued and bantered with many profanities in between each before G interrupted us. "Guys, guys," all three of us stopped and looked at her. "Where are D and M?" she exclaimed. She was correct. They weren't with us. We hastily climbed the slope to see at a higher level. They had gone the night before in this direction. There was nothing. There was nobody. I couldn't even tell anyone had been there. We all started yelling their names. We hopped back down to the original level, continuing to call out for them. Then it hit me. I stopped talking and hushed the others. Why was there an echo? It made zero sense. The natural structure of the canopy and wilderness did not correlate with auditory recircling. It seemed to only come from underneath my level, like it was following me. I thought about it for a moment. The slashed tires, they weren't the shape of a knife or a blade or whatever else, they were shaped like four sharp fingers had sunken into them. D and M had disappeared without a trace, and there was an odd and illogical echo from the dense forest of which, mind you, we could not see into. Everything put together. The rock that was thrown at us. The dread we felt when opening the gate. Hell, even the vacancy of the road. Either there was a once-in-a-lifetime perfect alignment of the stars and this was just insanely inopportune, or there was something inexplicable happening. I accepted it was the latter. Something was wrong. Something was hideously flawed. I could see the cogs clicking into place in everyone else's minds. After a long, intense pause, I said, "Oh, hell," and the echo repeated it. Only I was paying attention now. It was indeed an echo, but it was wrong. It was all wrong. It was garbled and inhumanly deep and monotone. I said, "Oh, hell," to hear it again, "Oh, hell." The echo repeated back in a grotesque mimicry of me. I slowly turned back to my friends. They knew it. This was wrong. This was all wrong. Oh hell, oh hell, oh hell, I said slowly, backing away from the railing. Oh hell, oh hell, oh hell. The creature, as I concluded this was indeed a beast, mimicked back. This time, it seemed to move, not stopping, but continuing to repeat oh hell. It was perverse and a demonic tone. It was moving to my right. I looked over to my right and saw something that could have possibly been the end of me if I had not noticed it. The railing about 20 feet to my right had collapsed, leaving an opportunity to fall, or, what I was more worried about, climb up with relative ease. I screamed at the top of my lungs for everyone to run, and we all booked it the opposite way. I swear I could hear it calmly but loudly echo back in its chillingly otherworldly and malicious mannerism. As it repeated me again, it made it up to our level. As it turned out, our bout of terrible luck seemed to have ended, and as luck would have it, as we ran the other way, we saw a black beater pickup truck slowly approaching us. About 50 feet away from us, this guy was definitely shady as hell, and under any normal circumstances, we would have avoided it at all cost. But this was far from normal circumstance. The other three hopped in the truck's bed and I got in the passenger side, where it was plain to see this guy was a meth head. Let me tell you, I've never been so glad to see a meth head in my entire life, and I never thought I would be either. We got out of there. Eventually, when we got back to the safety of, you know, civilization, we called the police and told them everything, crying hysterically and sobbing. Once we finally got back to our parents, we finally felt safe again. Everybody asked us what happened, and we kind of refused to tell them. The guilt was too much. Statements were taken, crime scenes were investigated, and reports were filed. No remains of D or M were ever found, although officially they were classified as deceased. I never saw their parents again. I guess the grief overcame them and they never went out after that. But who knows? There is one thing I do know, though. I'll never go back to Highway 87. Hey, Swamp folks. Sorry to interrupt this episode of Spooky Urban Horror Stories. But today's episode is sponsored by our longtime friends at HelloFresh. For those of you new to HelloFresh, HelloFresh gets you farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh's chefs really know how to diversify the menu with seasonal recipes like salmon, limon, and pasta primavera. Pick your favorites from over 50 different weekly options and skip weeks when you need to. Change your delivery date or update your preferences all in HelloFresh's convenient app. I've been using this service for over 2 years now, before they even sponsored this channel, and I can tell you it is a lifesaver. With my workout routine and my work schedule, it gets really hard to eat healthy and cook sometimes. But with these pre-portioned meals, it makes it incredibly easy for me to know what to do from day to day in a quick 20 to 30 minute session of cooking. So, what are you waiting for? Join me and tons of others in the swamp. Go to HelloFresh.com/swamped16 and use code swamped16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Again, go to HelloFresh.com/swamped16 and use code swamped16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. HelloFresh.com/swamped16. My name is Riley and I am 26 years old and a guy from Milwaukee. I'm about to tell this story and it is entirely true. It took place about 3 years ago. Here's a bit of background information. It was late summer, probably early September, and a group of my friends and I decided we wanted to go on an urban exploration. We had often done this in some more rundown areas of Milwaukee, usually in the northern side. It was pretty risky because of the area's history of drugs, gang violence, and settlers. However, we were always cautious in these situations and had pretty good luck with never running into crazy people. You could say we were just fascinated by what was inside of the buildings itself, and it gave us a bit of a rush. The night we left, there was a small group of us going, 5 in total. It was my friends, Jamie, Kevin, Vin, and Ty.
We all were suburban white kids except for Vin, who was half Asian, and Ty, who was black. We were all relatively the same age, except Ty, who was 29 and had gone to the same high school in the suburb of Bayside where we had lived. My friend Jamie was the only girl going and happened to be the one who would drive us there because she had a large SUV that could fit us all. She also happened to be Kevin's girlfriend at the time. We drive to North Milwaukee, past some terrible neighborhoods and many rundown buildings. The location we were going to was an old elementary school that had shut down back in the late 90s. We had learned about it through an urban explorer group on Facebook and managed to get in contact with a guy who had been there twice. He told me the building was quite large and had three floors and a basement floor that was destroyed due to flooding and exposure. He said it still had a stage down there where the little kids would perform in plays and musicals. I remember him telling me that he found some old costumes the kids used to perform in, but he also warned me that there was a lot of black mold and asbestos. Nonetheless, we parked in a large parking lot behind the school that at one point was a busy plaza, but was virtually empty now, and was highly cracked and had weeds growing all across it. We approached the back fence that separated the school playground and the lot. Most of the playground equipment was broken, rusted, or missing. We all walked together to a small opening in the fence by the swing set that would just allow you to get through if you were careful enough. Kevin stood at 6'5 and weighed about 230 pounds, so he knew he couldn't get through. It didn't matter though, because we did need one person to wait by the car so it wasn't broken into and to keep an eye out for any cops or any weirdos who came in after us. However, Jamie chickened out due to the weather and wanted to wait with Kevin, so we let her. Ty, Vin, and I got through the fence and made our way across the playground towards the school's back doors. Along the way, I noticed a no trespassing sign a few feet away from the fence, but quickly pushed it out of my mind. There was a chain on the double doors that kept people from entering the school, but it looked like someone had cut it a long time ago, and I kicked it off to the side, where it laid coiled up and rusted. Now, I'm going to talk about the weather that night because it adds a lot to the story. It was in the high 80s, but it felt much higher due to the humidity. In the distance, I remember there were large storm clouds, so I knew we had to hurry with the exploration. Vin had brought a camera with him and Ty was recording with his cell phone and had a flashlight app open. We never ended up not needing the flashlight because obviously it was dark. But there was a little bit of light trickling in so we could see just enough, from the broken ceiling and broken windows. As we entered, the door opened with almost no noise, which was strange, but the floor was covered with pieces of damaged roof, paint chips, trash, and dust. The air smelled very wet and musty. The temperature inside felt much hotter and more humid, but we just wiped our foreheads and held our water bottles in our hands. We looked around the floor, which was the ground floor, for about 15 minutes before we decided to move to the second floor. Ty suggested the basement, but the Facebook guy's description of the staircase condition changed all of our minds. Vin led the way, followed by Ty and me at the rear. The stairs were covered in debris, so our steps made deafening crunches up the staircase. Keep this in mind. We had gone on these explorations many times and have never run into anyone except a very nice homeless woman and her dog many years ago who told us to stay away from heroin. You could say we were overconfident and had our guard down. We reached the second floor, which had more classrooms than the bottom floor. Most of the rooms were trashed entirely due to the weather or vandals coming in. The desk lay all over the bed, either broken or knocked over. Most of the windows were boarded up or broken, and graffiti covered most of every inch of the building that we had seen. However, some rooms were spared and looked as if students who once sat in them had just vanished into thin air, while nature slowly took over the building. Many of the desks still had supplies in them, and the coat hooks still had coats on them. The chalkboard still had things written on it. Ty even found a desk plate with a teacher's name on it that read, Mrs. Johnson. After we wiped away the dust, it eventually became clear that people just kind of abandoned this place. I found a folder on one of the desks that belonged to a kid named Kiana. I gathered that she was a girl in fourth grade. It even saw a date on her old assignments that indicated it was from February of 1999. Many of the rooms in better shape had things like this, so we eventually got bored and decided it was time to move on. As we approached the staircase to the third floor, I had a strange feeling in the pit of my stomach. You know, the kind of feeling you get when you think someone is about to jump out and scare you at any minute. I told Ty and Vin about it, and Ty told me not to be a wimp and keep on moving because he was starting to hear thunder in the distance. I noticed that it was starting to get more relaxed in the building, and it was much easier to breathe as we came up to the third floor. It was here where we had run into a strange and frightening situation. I noticed that the school's third floor was different from the other floors. The floor had much more trash on it. The trash appeared to be pretty recent, though. Many old pieces of furniture were put in the back part of the first hallway. Then, Ty said something that gave me a good cold chill up my spine. I couldn't tell you why. He noticed that the floor was not nearly as dusty and had fresher footprints than any we had seen earlier. We walked for a few more minutes, and I could tell that we were very nervous about running into somebody. Just before we reached a hallway with many classrooms, I decided to text Kevin to see if there was any strange activity outside. He replied within 10 seconds and said that it looked normal, but it could rain at any second. I told him to stay focused and message me if anything odd happened. We looked through many of the old rooms and found nothing but trash, old furniture, and rubble. One of the rooms Vin had walked into had half of its floor caved in. He was lucky that he saw it when he did. A few minutes went by and Ty said, "Dude, check this out." Vin and I walked over to him and saw a bag full of old used syringes. The needles looked very old and the plastic Ziploc bag was torn and tattered. I told him to drop the bag before he got hepatitis or AIDS. We chuckled and continued to walk down the hall toward the furniture pile. We noticed that behind this pile was a staircase wholly filled with old shelves, chairs, and tables. To our right was a large room that was relatively clear but had mattresses scattered about. There were a lot of cigarette butts lying on the floor, and an old rusted oil drum was in the middle of the room. Vin said that the space used to be a library because of a small plaque he had seen above the doorway. It made sense to see why there were so many shelves piled up right outside the door. As we got closer to the far end of the room, we examined the mattresses. There were about 5 of them, and they were all filthy and torn up. Some had disgusting-looking stains on them and horrible body odor smells to them. Vin noticed a small stack of pornographic magazines by the bed on the farthest side of the room. We all got a good chuckle out of it. The room had 2 large windows parallel to each other, but they were boarded up and allowed almost no light into the room. As we got to the back of the room, we heard the sound of music being played. All of us froze in unison as the door swung open. There was a man at the entrance of the door. His face told us that he was not happy we were there. He was of average height and had a shaved head and short, scruffy beard. He wore a faded brown shirt and some old white basketball shorts. His shoes were white at some point, but now they were stained brown. He was a white man, but his whole body was covered in a thicker layer of dirt. I'll never forget his eyes. They were very pale blue and looked like the eyes of a wolf. However, I noticed the man behind him, who gave me chills at the same time. This man never once stood up and sat on a lawn chair with his left shoulder pointing towards us. He turned his head and looked at us. The man had bright pink hair, tied in a ponytail, and appeared to have no teeth at all. He looked very skinny, and his skin looked tight and pale. His eyeballs bulged slightly and gave him even more of a frightening appearance. He wore a white t-shirt and black shorts. This man never said a word to us. The man at the door spoke in a very rough and direct voice. He asked us what we were doing in the building, and if we were cops. Ty answered him that we were filming a documentary of the old historical buildings in the area, and we had no intentions of bothering anyone. The man appeared to relax more and asked us how long we wanted to stay. I jumped in and told him that we were almost done and that we were about to head out before the weather got bad. The man lit a cigarette and asked us if we wanted one, but we all declined. He then offered to give us a tour of the building, but we quickly said no. The man's demeanor changed again as a dark and angry look fell on his face, almost as if we offended him by refusing the tour. He eventually chuckled and said okay. He introduced himself as Walter and said the pink-haired man was Ronnie. To our surprise, the man cupped his hands as he hollered out quite loudly for someone named Marty.
There was no reply, and the bald man said he must have gone to somewhere else. As we talked for a few more minutes, I took out my cell phone and saw that Kevin sent me several messages. The message said that a man had walked into the building about a minute ago and that we needed to get the hell out of there as soon as possible. The man asked us how many of us there were altogether. I lied and said there were 7 of us because at this point I was feeling very, very uncomfortable. There was just something off about this guy. I was ready to crap myself. The feeling in my stomach was coming back. Something told me that they were very dangerous. Vin and Ty felt the same way and had edgy looks. The radio continued to play, but Walter ordered Marty to turn off the damn radio and that it was giving him a migraine. As he did, 2 things entered my head. He said the pink-haired guy was Ronnie, not Marty, and that as Ronnie or Marty or whoever the heck reached for the radio, I noticed a bungee cord wrapped around his arm and a syringe in it. I don't think Walter saw any of the things I was picking up on, but another man entered the room before anything could happen. This guy was by far the weirdest and most unsettling of the group. He was pretty short and had medium-length, Bieber-style dark hair. His clothes looked so much newer but by far too big for him. He had a blue Milwaukee Brewers t-shirt tucked into his oversized red sweatpants. His face looked sharp and leathery, but he appeared to have a skin condition. His eyes were a beady black color and wide open. Parts of his face were very bright pink and had many bumps on the lower corner of his bottom lip. He spoke in a more high-pitched rural accent. The other 2 men remained where they had been. Walter is in the doorway, and Marty and Ronnie in their chairs. The new man said his name was George and that he was very interested in Vin's camera. He asked what kind it was, where Vin got it, how much it cost, and why he had it. Vin went on to explain that his hobby was filming videos and that he would often photograph at weddings and other events. This was all true, and the man immediately perked up and smiled. That kind of smile that gives you an uneasy feeling in your gut. The best way to describe it would be how the Grinch smiled in the old animated movie. As creepy as this was, this is when things really started to get bad. He asked Vin if he ever recorded any little girls' beauty pageants or stuff like that. Vin told him no, and the man genuinely looked disappointed. He went on to say some more creepy stuff about how hot the girls were on those pageants, and how he would die to be alone with one of them. Our faces told the story of how we felt about hearing this, but the man seemed oblivious. He asked us all if we had any kids of our own. Ty slipped up and told him that he had 2 twin girls who were 2 years old. The man giggled in a very creepy and cringy way. He then asked Ty if he had ever left the girls alone by themselves or if he had a babysitter. Ty told him that he and his fiance watched the kids most of the time and would occasionally have his aunt babysit them if they could not. This guy continued to ask creepy questions, like if there were any pictures of the girls. For whatever reason, Ty showed him a few on his phone, and the man asked an odd question. He wondered if he would be allowed to date this guy's daughter. And I'm sure Ty wanted to drop this creep by this point, but he also knew that the other 2 were behind us, so we didn't know if they had guns or knives or what. Instead, he just said that he would have to get to know him more. The man giggled again and said that he would get to know him when he babysat them. The tone of his voice still sends chills down my spine. It was told in such a slow, seductive way that it just left that there was no doubt that this guy was indeed a creep. I saw Ty's brow drop when he was getting pretty upset at this point. I took my phone out and texted Kevin to honk his horn many times. The creepy weirdo stepped toward me and asked me who I was messaging as I did this. He was close enough for me to smell his bourbon breath. I leaned back slightly and told him that we needed to leave soon before bad weather. Walter spoke again and said that we might as well stay since the storm was beginning at any moment, and he didn't want us to get wet. Vin explained that we had 2 friends waiting for us outside. Just as he said that, we could hear a car horn blaring. Both the creep and the bald man showed no reaction to what happened and insisted we stay and invite our friends in. We all stood there and explained that we have to leave, and eventually they agreed. Nonetheless, George insisted he walk us out, and so we walked and got to the ground floor. As we crossed the floor, we could hear his creepy muttering and, I don't even know, every so often he would giggle to himself. We stepped outside. The weather was much more relaxed. The air smelled of ozone, and there was a static feeling in the air as tiny droplets of rain hit my face. George walked us over to the area of the fence we had entered. Ty slipped out first, followed quickly by Vin. They both tumbled down the steep hill and waited for me to go. As I tried to get through the fence, George pushed it against my chest. I was on edge, but it still caught me off guard. I gasped and leaned in close. The smell of bourbon made my head slightly turn. I'll never forget what he said to me in a rapid burst.
I know you know what I am. It doesn't matter, because I like it. You're lucky that that fine girl in that car was with that fat man, or I would have done whatever I wanted to her.
He said whatever. He said it much slower, seductively, and emphasized like he had dreamt about this. He licked his lips slowly at the end of the sentence. His beady eyes widened, and he let go of the fence. I quickly slipped through and tumbled down to the concrete. I was wondering, but I looked up to the creepy psycho. Ty, Vin, Kevin, and Jamie were all there to help me. They all looked at me and looked at this man in shock. Ty hurled an insult at him. George slowly rose up and looked at Ty through the fence. He put his tongue on the chain link border and made a licking motion. He winked, giggled, flashed his grinch smile, and said his last words to us, "For your girls," and gave a clear point to Ty. It took everything we had to keep Ty from going after him, but eventually, we lost sight of George, and Ty calmed down. We sat in the car for a while as the adrenaline rush dumped and left us feeling exhausted. We told Kevin and Jamie everything we had seen, heard, and felt. In the car, we decided to make this our last urban exploration ever. We all agreed unanimously that this was too close of a call. As I sat in the car, I kept thinking about each of the men we had seen. Who exactly were they? They were addicts of some kind, sure, but something seemed off about them. The pink-haired man said nothing and was like a ghost. The bald man said little, but his wolf eyes spoke so much, and the creepy man couldn't stop talking. I would later try to find these men on a jail mugshot website. I could never find them until Vin sent me a link to a sex offender registry website a few weeks ago. My heart nearly stopped. Pictured was the guy who said his name was George. He looked much younger and his hair was shorter, but it was undeniably him. He even had the same creepy smile in the photo. However, his real name was Charles Earl Daly. He was a wanted sex offender from Arkansas who was considered a very high-risk offender and possibly armed. His crimes included many assaults on minors under 12 years old, and many other things across that, type of thing, if you know what I mean. I knew how lucky I was to survive an encounter with this guy, and if I only knew who he was at the moment, I probably would have tried to end him. It still sends a shiver down my spine to think that we were in danger.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.